Thank you, Mandy, for that introduction. And as Mandy said, ephemera is stuff that is not intended to last. And I suppose the ephemera that appeals to me is perhaps an extreme form of that, because certainly fireworks, the remains of fireworks, are not expected to last. So I suppose I should start my talk by giving a bit of an explanation in how I got interested in this at all. And it all started back in England, where I was born too long ago. And I first started collecting fireworks stuff when I was 4 years old, on the morning of the 6th of November, 1950. The previous evening, my dad had performed an act of magic, conjuring sparks and coloured lights and bangs from little cylinders of paper. A few days before, Dad had arrived home from work carrying a big brown paper bag with several straight wooden sticks poking from the top. Mum said, "Oh, I know what Daddy's bought." I didn't know what she meant and was none the wiser when Dad showed us what was in the bag. The wooden sticks were attached to cylinders of coloured paper. There was also a flat cardboard box, exactly like the one shown on the top of the screen there, and covered with shiny orange paper and with a colourful label on the top. There's a lad of about the same vintage carrying a hoard of the same sort of fireworks I'm talking about in the same sort of box. And if you were to open the box, you'd find something like that. And I think it's really wonderful that these days we can find things on the internet that previously were just memories. But though that was a picture that I stole from the internet, as were the previous three, but they're exactly as I remembered them. Anyway, some days later, I remember going outside well ragged up to watch Dad let off these fireworks. He told us what each one was called before he lit it. "This is a jewel fountain," he said, and he lit a match. Nothing happened, just a dull red glow in the dark. Then amazingly, a magical spray of sparkling light appeared in the dark. I don't remember all the names of the fireworks we saw that night, just certain remarks that have stuck in my mind. "That's the rainbow. Oh, look at the lovely green flame." Well, a green flame, who'd ever thought of such a thing? I remember Dad holding one called a Spitfire that had its own little handle of red wood fixed to the base, and there's a picture of one of those right at the bottom of the screen there. Then there was a rather sinister firework that Dad took round the corner of the house to light. "It's going to be a bang," he warned, and sure enough there was a very loud bang just a moment later. I was scared, but it was an oddly pleasant sort of scare. By this time I was getting to know what to expect when that little red glow appeared. But nothing I'd ever seen compared to the incredible sight of the first skyrocket. The loud hissing noise, the trail of fire climbing higher and higher into the sky, higher than anything could possibly go, and then changing into red and green lights that seemed to be falling back down again, disappeared all too quickly. It was the most wonderful thing I had ever seen. The next day I went outside to see if anything remained of the fireworks. There, wet with dew, were the burned-out cases. Some almost burned away, others were hardly damaged at all. I brought them all inside, and Mum identified each one. Later that day, on a walk to the shops, we found more burned-out fireworks, which we picked up and added to the collection. In the years that followed, we always had fireworks for Guy Fawkes Night, and I always searched for the burned-out remains the next day. My mum was a tolerant parent, but she did not encourage the accumulation of rubbish. We moved house every couple of years, because my stepfather was a teacher, and each move provided an opportunity for Mum to get rid of my hoard of burned out fireworks. I suspect she thought it was a bit of a weird thing for a boy to collect such things, and I too was somewhat cautious about it. I knew that people collected stamps and coins and matchbox labels, even birds' eggs, but I'd never heard of anyone collecting burned-out fireworks. Over the years, I retained my early fascination with fireworks. I was devastated when they were banned. This happened in 1967 in Western Australia, where we lived at the time. What a delight to find them still available when we moved to Victoria in 1980, and what bitter disappointment when they were forbidden only 2 years later. I consoled myself by acquiring books on fireworks, which turned out to be few and far between. In the late 1980s, I discovered that I was not alone in my obsession with fireworks. I began subscribing to some overseas publications for firework enthusiasts and soon learned that there were several keen collectors of firework memorabilia. Reassured that my interest was not quite as odd as I had feared, I began to accumulate all sorts of ephemera related to fireworks: advertisements, posters, brochures, packaging, labels, stationery, and even greeting cards and postcards depicting fireworks. The material was not common, but over the years I built up quite a hoard. The main point of my talk today is to show how paper ephemera can be used to illustrate the history of a commercial company. Just as collectors of stamps often become interested in the history of the postal service, I became interested in the history of firework manufacturing companies. Today, I will use some items from my collection to illustrate the history of the Phoenix Fireworks Company, which operated here in Melbourne from 1892 to 1966. The Phoenix Fireworks Company began in the early 1890s as a probably unauthorised successor to Brock's Fireworks. Brock's was a long-established English company, and at the time, they were the largest firework company in the world. In the 1880s, they were active in Australia, based in Melbourne. Their displays were so successful that in 1887, they built a factory at Keilor, but it was destroyed in a fire on the 26th of October 1887, only a few months after it opened. It was speculated that the fire had been caused because a passing swagman had lit a fire next to the chemical storage shed. The following year, an explosion destroyed a shed on the Melbourne cricket ground where Brock's employees were making fireworks ready for a display that night. By 1890, Brock's had placed their Australian operations in the hands of an agent, a Swanston Street merchant named Samuel Joseph Welsford. Sam Welsford, who'd been born in London in 1838, arrived in Melbourne in 1858 and eventually went into business as an importer and merchant. In May 1884, he was advertising fireworks for the Queen's birthday and for wholesale sale. In September of that year, he bought the fancy good business of Walter Draper of Elizabeth Street, Melbourne. This included the agency for the London Firework Company of Baker & Sons. In April 1887, Welsford was also advertising Brock's fireworks. And in 1889, Mr. Brock himself put on a firework display for Welsford's daughter-in-law. In April of the following year, Welsford was the sole agent in Australia for Brock's fireworks, which is shown in that newspaper clipping. At the bottom there, S.J. Welsford, 209 Swanston Street, Melbourne, a sole agent for C.T. Brock & Company in Australia. By August of the same year, Welsford was describing himself as a firework manufacturer and promoting his Phoenix brand fog signal rockets to the Launceston Marine Board, claiming that these rockets were already in use by the Victorian government. This is the first appearance of the Phoenix brand name in connection with Welsford's pyrotechnic ventures. In May of 1891, Welsford obtained permission from the local council to build a firework factory at Braybrook. And it says there that Mr. Welsford's application to Liberty to erect a fireworks factory was granted. After the same had been granted, a letter was handed in from J.W. Thompson objecting to the same. Too late, Mr. Thompson. Early in the following year, Welsford and his son and two other Melbourne businessmen set up the Phoenix Fireworks Company to operate the new factory, which opened in February 1892. Samuel Welsford was the chairman of the company. His son Samuel Leonard Joseph Welsford was the secretary. I don't have pictures of the Welsfords, unfortunately, but here are portraits of the other two directors, Mr. Burrows and Mr. Buxton. Here is a copy of the first half-yearly report of the Phoenix Fireworks Company, presented on Tuesday the 20th September 1892. As you can see, Phoenix had a trademark, a phoenix on its blazing nest up there at the top. This trademark is absent on the next item, which is an advertising poster dating from the early days of the company. This poster is no earlier than 1895, as that date is mentioned on it, and no later than 1904, because the managing director is mentioned as Joseph Haymanson, and he died in 1904. So there's a 9-year window of where that poster could have been printed. The poster reveals that Phoenix successfully exhibited at the Tasmanian International Exhibition of 1891 to 1892. This was held in Launceston, opening on the 25th of November of 1891, closing on the 22nd of March 1892. Now, it's remarkable that Phoenix staged a successful exhibition only a few months after permission to construct its factory was granted. Their exhibit, a case showing a varied collection of specimens of their manufactures, was ready by the 13th of November 1891, 12 days before the official opening. Curiously, the official record of the exhibition gives Phoenix's address as Braybrook, England, instead of Braybrook, Victoria. The Phoenix Firework Company received a first award for fancy fireworks and illumination lights, marine rockets, life-saving rockets, distress signals, light and fog signals. The suspicion that many of these items came from England, and perhaps from the Brock factory for which Welsford was still the agent, rather than from Braybrook, is heightened by the fact that in the 1930s, over 40 years after this exhibition, Phoenix made much of having recently developed its own life-saving rockets. Phoenix also received a first award for mortars for firing rockets. This is odd, as mortars are not used for firing rockets. Was the mistake made by the judges or by the businessmen who submitted the entry? But perhaps the most interesting aspect of this poster is the symbol in the middle. It depicts the Crystal Palace in London, and this same building had long been used as Brock's trademark, as shown here. Perhaps the Phoenix poster was adapted from a similar one for Brock's. One can but wonder if the name Phoenix symbolises the new company having arisen from the ashes of Brock's ill-fated Australian enterprise. The earliest example of a Phoenix product in my collection is this pair of matchbox labels. They were for special label matches that burned with coloured flames. Such matches were once very popular for home fireworks shows. Phoenix had them made in Germany, as could be seen from the Made in Germany wording hidden in the pattern at the top of the label. I bought the labels from a dealer in matchbox labels, and the reason they've survived at all is that people collect matchbox labels. They've never been used, and their shabby state must be the result of their having been handled by many collectors over the years. Look at the sticky stain on the green one. It shows that we need to be careful with the things that come into our temporary custody as we add them to our collections. The wording on these matchbox labels allows them to be dated to within a few years. Obviously, they are printed after 1892. The fact that the company is described simply as the Phoenix Fireworks Company shows that the labels were printed before 1897. In that year, it became compulsory for the words Proprietary Limited, or PTY Limited, to be appended to the names of all Australian limited liability companies. And there we have a letter on Welsford's letterhead advising the shareholders that they're to gather together for a meeting to approve this application to become a proprietary limited company, dated in 1897. And there we have a letter from the company's solicitors confirming that that indeed happened in October 1897. So we can put those old matchbox labels to within 5 years just by taking careful notice on what's written on them. The next item is a letterhead from 1909. It's an advertisement for firework displays for Empire Day, the 24th of May. This was originally celebrated as the birthday of Queen Victoria, who was 24th of May, 1819. It later became Empire Day, and then Commonwealth Day, and eventually in some Australian states, simply Cracker Night. The letterhead gives much information about the company besides the address of its offices and factory. We learn that Phoenix were pyrotechnists and manufacturers of marine signals, fireworks, etc. Displays of fireworks, large and small, undertaken on land or water. Contractors to the Victorian, South Australian, Western Australian, Tasmanian governments for displays at Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee 1897 and on the occasion of the visit of the Duke and Duchess of Cornwall and York in 1901. The date of 1909 is significant because in that year, the company was taken over by the firm of J&N Tate, the famous Melbourne theatrical promoters. The official notice of the winding up of the original Phoenix Fireworks Company Proprietary Limited was published the following year. It is not possible to put an exact date on this advertising poster, but the costumes of the two boys suggest that it was early 20th century. This is supported by the O and the E in the name Phoenix being combined in a ligature. This practice was abandoned by the 1920s, as we shall see. Here's my favourite Phoenix poster, obviously by the same artist. You see fireworks made in Australia prominently displayed. The lad in the Eton collar thinking it's a good idea to set them all off at once and sent his, presumably his father, flying skywards. The next letterhead is dated 25th of May 1926. And he's concerned with ensuring that rockets were provided with the correct size sticks. And it goes into details about the unfortunate consequences that would happen if the wrong size stick was put on the rocket. This letter is addressed to Alex Corr and Company in Launceston. And many other items of Phoenix ephemera came from the same company. Presumably this firm kept an extensive archive of its correspondence, which at some stage fell into the hands of dealers in paper ephemera. And notice too that the name Phoenix at the top in 1926 no longer has the O and the E run together, so that again gives us a clue as how we can date this sort of material. The letterhead also describes Phoenix as pyrotechnists and ammunition manufacturers. I've not been able to find any record of Phoenix ever having made ammunition, and this remains a challenge for the future. I once thought it might have been a legacy of the firm's activities during the First World War, but I recently found that the owners of the ill-fated Brock factory built at Keilor in 1887 had also described themselves as pyrotechnists and ammunition manufacturers. Here we have an invoice dated the 5th of April 1827, again directed to Alex Corr and Company. It's for a range of inexpensive fireworks, no doubt intended for sale to the public on Empire Day. The range includes penny and threepenny wheels. In this photo, part of a set that amazingly survived from the mid-1920s, we see a lady making these wheels at the Phoenix factory in Sunshine. She is winding a long paper tube filled with firework composition around a cardboard disc to make the wheel. A pile of finished wheels can be seen in the middle of the picture. There is a hole in the middle of the wheel to receive a pin or small nail with which the wheel was hung from a post for firing. When lit, the wheel spun furiously, producing a wonderful halo of sparks. The next picture shows workers at Phoenix making jumping jacks. These were made from paper tubes filled with gunpowder, bent in a zigzag shape and tied with string. When lit, there was a small explosion at each bend, causing the firework to jump around at random. The girl in the background is called Sadie Pemberton, later Mrs. Parsons, and she spent many years working at Phoenix. I met her in 1988 when she was 80 years of age, and we spent a very pleasant afternoon chatting about fireworks. She said that she'd worked on all sorts of fireworks in her time, but the jumping jacks were her favourites. Really lovely, such happy little fireworks were her words. She gave me a very detailed account of how they were made. I don't have a picture of Phoenix jumping jacks, but here's a photo of some English ones obtained from the internet just to show what they looked like. And there was a Phoenix label applied to parcels of jumping jacks. This label was one of a large assortment that was found in 1988 by Mr. Charles Tyner, the managing director of Payne's Wessex Australia Proprietary Limited, which was a successor company to Phoenix. Mr. Tyner found them at the premises of the printer, Herbert L. Slater, who still produced labels for the company, and Mr. Tyner kindly gave me specimens of all the labels. Now we come to the 1930s. Here is an aerial photograph of the Phoenix Firework Factory at the corner of McIntyre Road and Phoenix Street in Sunshine. The factory at the lower left of the picture was the Spalding's Sporting Goods Factory, and it's now the site of Bunnings Warehouse. So if you go to Bunnings Warehouse in Sunshine and look out across Phoenix Street, that was where the firework factory was until 1966. The Phoenix factory is on the left, and it's that collection of little huts. And the reason that they were little huts was that if something unpleasant should happen in one hut, consequences would be confined to that hut and not spread to others. The houses were in Garnet Street, and Mrs. Parsons, the lady I mentioned earlier, lived in one of those houses when she was a girl. And she went to work there at an early age because it was just over the back fence and she didn't have far to go.
Sorry to interrupt, was the name Phoenix Street because?
Yes, it was. It was originally Hereford Road, but there was some confusion because there was a Hartford Road in another part of Sunshine. And so at some stage, and I don't remember off the top of my head when, it was changed to Phoenix Street because of the factory which was there. Okay, now, here is a picture of the firework display celebrating the opening of the Sydney Harbour Bridge in March 1932. The picture came from a Phoenix brochure, and it claims the pyrotechnics were by the Phoenix Fireworks Company, Melbourne. The official record, however, shows that the display was a joint effort between Phoenix and the New South Wales firm of Howard & Son, which is still currently in existence and putting on firework displays. Another Phoenix achievement in the 1930s was the development of its own version of a rocket for carrying a line. Originally intended for use in shipwrecks, the rockets were also useful for other situations in which a line needed to be carried between two otherwise inaccessible points. This label was for just such a rocket. In the 1940s, the Phoenix factory produced items for military use. This label is for use with a particularly horrible weapon named from the Soviet politician, diplomat, and foreign minister, Molotov. Originally, it was a glass bottle filled with petrol, fitted with a petrol-soaked rag to act as a fuse. The weapon was first used in the Spanish Civil War of 1936 to 1939. The name Molotov cocktail was introduced by the Finns, who used such devices to attack Soviet tanks during the Soviet invasion of Finland in the Winter War of 1939 to 1940. The Phoenix igniter was evidently a replacement for the original petrol-soaked rag, allowing the weapon to be ignited as needed by pulling on a string. Here's a label for a product evidently intended for training people to deal with burning incendiary bombs. The next label was for a cardboard hand grenade for use in military training exercises to imitate the bursting of an artillery shell. This one is a label for a signal rocket for use at sea. It describes the attachment of a stick to the rocket, which shows that the signal rocket of those days was still essentially a large firework skyrocket, provided with friction ignition. This is very different from modern signal rockets, as we shall see. We begin our look at Phoenix in the 1950s with an invoice for a firework display at Shepparton, clearly for the agricultural show of 1952. The company is still claiming to be ammunition manufacturers. Now, the next few pictures are scans of labels used on the smaller background and fireworks. These labels were wrapped around the paper tube that formed the body of the firework. For cheapness, they are printed in just one colour, so each label required only one plate and one pass through the printing press. These labels were in use in the 1950s, but may well have been used much earlier. My stepfather, who is in his early 90s, remembers having seen fireworks with these labels in his boyhood. And I remember the one with that particular label as being one of the very first fireworks that we had in Australia when we got here in 1952. You can see as they're, even though they're only the one colour, they go to a bit of trouble to make them look attractive, and they're just evidence here of incorporating reference to contemporary exciting technology, which makes me suspect that they're actually in use a lot earlier than the 1950s. Now, this next item is an example of what they call printer's flong, which is paper into which the metal plates for doing the printing were cast. And I was given that when I visited the printer, Herbert Slater, back in 1988, and he found it in his garage, and he gave it to me along with the corresponding metal printing block for that radium fountain label. So I suppose it's rare for the labels to survive, perhaps rarer still for the blocks to survive, and I don't know how rare it would be for the actual flong to survive. Now, there's another sort of label that we used for putting on fireworks that were too big or too awkward a shape to have a wrap-round label. And they had the advantage that they could be used on fireworks of many different sizes. Here we have a label for another signal rocket, and it produced a large explosion to attract attention. Before firing a signal rocket, the operator had to insert a detonator into a separate block of gun cotton and then place the assembly in the head of the rocket. Not the sort of operation that one would wish to undertake in the stressful circumstances requiring the use of such a rocket. This is a label for a handheld white flare for use at sea. These flares were made in red, white, or blue. Red was to indicate distress. White was to attract attention or to acknowledge the sighting of a distress signal. And blue was specifically to request a pilot. These flares were fitted with wooden handles. In the base of each handle, there was a wooden peg tipped with a striker composition to ignite the flare by friction. Here we see a Phoenix advertising poster with a wonderful cartoon showing children running amok with fireworks. The implication in this poster was that irresponsible use of fireworks is all part of the fun. As subsequent events would show, some people in positions of power took a distinctly different view. And in time, they persuaded the general public that back garden fireworks were far too dangerous for even grown-ups to use, let alone children. Times change. This poster can be dated to the 1950s because the National Library of Australia has identified the cartoonist from the small symbol at the lower right as the cartoonist Emile Mercier. Here's a picture of Mercier at work, and there are a couple of other examples of Mercier's work. And this poster is obviously from the same artist. The next picture shows the pride of my Phoenix collection, a salesman's board of dummy fireworks. For many years, this gathered dust and faded in the sunlight as it hung in an antique shop in High Street, Paran. The owner of the shop told me that he had bought it from another antique shop nearby. He told me that it had originally had its own carrying case, but that was thrown away and the cardboard boards were glued onto a sheet of chipboard for hanging in the shop. I pestered the shopkeeper to sell the board for many years, but it was never for sale. Eventually, however, the shop closed down, and one day I received a surprise phone call from the owner asking if I was still interested in that old board of fireworks. I was. The board shows several examples of each of the two different types of firework labels just described. It's interesting that some of the smaller rockets were not labelled at all. It must have been assumed that anyone buying a rocket would naturally know what it was and how to use it. The 1950s brought a new problem for Phoenix. It had always faced competition from English and Chinese manufacturers of shop fireworks. But in the mid-1950s, a local competitor appeared. These are some of the fireworks made by Vulcan Fireworks in New South Wales. Their colourful labels are much more appealing than the rather drab Phoenix ones, and the fireworks performed at least as well. Vulcan Fireworks soon became very popular. Now we come to the 1960s. Here we see Phoenix's response to the colourful labels of their competitors. These wrapper-type firework labels were produced by three-colour printing, a much more costly process that required three separate plates and three passes through the printing press. They must have been introduced to compete with the colourful products from their many competitors who had always used three-colour printing. You might remember that some of these are exactly the same names as used in the earlier single-colour printed labels. Unfortunately, the effort was not successful. Mrs. Parsons told me that the end of the retail firework business at Phoenix came about when the government changed taxes on fireworks. She recalled the boss, who's Mr. Thomas M. Keane, telling the workers, "That's it, sorry, no more fireworks." I've not yet tracked down what those tax changes may have been. Anyway, the Phoenix Fireworks Company was wound up, and reconstituted as Phoenix Fuse Igniters and Flares Proprietary Limited. The factory continued to make marine signals and fuse igniters. The latter were small fireworks that burned for 1 minute with a hot green flame. They were used to light the fuses of high explosives in the mining and quarrying industries. They mostly were sold to ICI, who marketed them as Dragon Brand Fuse Igniters. I've not yet found any labels for fuse igniters from this period. Here's a label for a military training grenade, similar to the one I showed earlier. And here is a label for a blue marine flare. Notice that the address is given as Hawthorne. This is because the office was there in Glenfrey Road, and there are already plans to sell off the old factory in Sunshine. The land had become very valuable real estate. In 1967, a new pyrotechnics factory was established at Lara. Some of the worksheds from the old Sunshine site were transported to Lara, where they remained in use for another 30 years or so. For a while, the company used the trading name Phoenix Marine Signals and produced a range of distress signals as well as fuse igniters. This is a matchbox label from that time. The 1/3 excise mark shows that the matches were actually made by Bryant and May in Melbourne. In 1969, the directors of Phoenix decided to seek collaboration with a leading overseas pyrotechnics company. It must have become apparent that Phoenix was still using essentially 19th century technology, and the rest of the world had moved on. The English firms Payne's Wessex Limited agreed to a joint venture, and in 1970, Phoenix was restructured as Payne's Wessex Australia Proprietary Limited. Marine signals were marketed under the Payne's Wessex trademark as well as under the Phoenix brand. Some marine signals were imported from the Payne's Wessex factory in England and marketed in Australia as Phoenix brand signals. Here's a label for an English-made smoke signal using the old Phoenix brand. And finally, here is a label for a modern compact distress signal rocket, again made in England but marketed under the Phoenix brand. What a contrast to the cumbersome stick-stabilised rockets used for the same purposes a few decades earlier. These things were just a cylinder about so long that you hold in the hand, pull a ring on the bottom, the rocket goes flying up into the air. No fiddling around with sticks or putting gun cotton into the end of it or anything like that. We've come full circle, with English products complementing the Australian-made range, just as they did in the very first year of the Phoenix Fireworks Company. And we've also come to the end of the story. Some years ago, Payne's Wessex Australia Proprietary Limited was acquired by the British company Chemring. They built a completely new factory in a remote part of Lara. This is still in operation, manufacturing distress flares and other pyrotechnic devices, but not fireworks. Those days are gone. End of the Phoenix story, but some completely different firework ephemera may be of some interest. some Indian firework labels of the 1980s. Fireworks are incredibly popular in India. They're widely sold, freely available everywhere. They're manufactured there in large quantities. And some of the labels I've chosen as being particularly different from what we might have been seeing previously. These ones are printed on metal foil, and unfortunately the scanning process doesn't bring out their beauty, but they sparkle in gold on the green and yellow. Very beautiful. The next few show that the Indians don't have our reservations about letting children muck around with fireworks. Of course, the swastika was a symbol of good luck in Indian culture long before it was adopted elsewhere. Now, another feature of Indian fireworks is that they are predominantly bought by men. And some of the labels are clearly designed to draw the attention of men by showing attractive young ladies, as we see here. And there, and even there. And finally, the most absurd of all, they wouldn't dare show dancing girls bare bottoms, so they have the absurd situation of carrying a pair of piglets appropriately placed. And that is the end of my presentation for today. Thank you for your attention.